Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. In this podcast, I'm going to talk about why mountain biking is not a gender-neutral sport and what this means for female riders. Now, first, I want to make my intention with this podcast clear up front. It is in no way meant to try to disparage or discourage women riders or, you know, women from trying riding. That's not the point of the podcast, of what I'm going to go over here. The point is actually to help women understand how to have a better experience riding, right? Like, what are the things that women can do that will help them? Because there are some differences between men and women. And so my motivation is to help women riders, not discourage them. And just personally, I think that us pretending that things are a way that we wish that they were, you know, that rather than actually dealing with the way that things are, hurts the people that they're intended to help. And so, you know, just on a personal note, my wife rides. When we met, 20 years ago, I was just getting into riding, and I got her into riding at the same time. And so, like, we fell in love and got married with mountain biking as the backdrop. And it's something that we still love to do together today. I've got a 15-year-old daughter that rides. I've helped, you know, countless women riders. So I love getting women into riding. I mean, I just love getting people into riding, period. I think that the more people who are mountain biking, especially using it as a vehicle for, you know, self-improvement and learning lessons that help them both on and off the trail. Like, I think mountain biking is such a great activity for that. And so the more people, period, that are mountain biking, the better. But I definitely think that, you know, the more women riders we have, the better as well. So again, the intention here is to try to help people, not try to discourage them or you know, tell them what they can't do or anything like that. So please don't put words in my mouth and you know, take my intention as being a bad one with this. So with that out of the way, let's get into it. So there's a couple reasons that this subject has come up on my mind. The first reason and most recent is my daughter's getting into mountain biking, which is great. You know, she's 15 years old, and so she's getting old enough to where mountain biking is starting to look like fun to her. And so I've been waiting for this moment for, you know, 15 years. She's rode bikes and stuff, but she's never really been into mountain biking. It just hasn't been fun for her. But I knew that at one point it would be. I knew that if I just was patient, that at a certain point she would reach a point in her maturity where, you know, her size and her strength would make mountain biking more appealing. And so, and one of the things too that she has done is she has been working out. She's been strength training and she's been running. And so she's been doing things that have made her stronger and fitter than the average 15-year-old girl. And those things have definitely helped her as she's looking to try to get into mountain biking and made mountain biking more fun right off the bat. Having some strength and having some fitness helps mountain biking be more fun right off the bat, especially for a young girl. And so just, you know, that has been kind of front and center on my mind. And just over the last really like few years, you know, I've seen this kind of social justice warrior creep into the mountain biking industry. And, it really kind of got highlighted for me, I guess, it was a year or two ago. I was at a local mountain biking film festival. And, you know, again, I believe everybody's intentions are good. But as they say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So, you know, there was a girl who was presenting the movies that were being shown. And of course, she made a point to point out that she had looked for and tried to include as many women-related and women-produced films as possible. And one of her reasons was because mountain biking is a gender-neutral sport. And it, again, that term just kind of stuck with me. And as a strength coach, I realized right off the bat, I'm like, well, that's just a fantasy, right? Like, because mountain biking is definitely not a gender neutral sport. No sport, no activity is a gender neutral sport. And so, but I guess like we have to kind of wind back, like, what are we talking about when we say gender neutral sport, gender neutral activity? And so if you're saying that it's neutral as far as like everybody should have equal opportunity, I'm totally with you on that. I don't believe that anybody should be discouraged from riding. I believe that, you know, you definitely shouldn't be told like, oh, you can't ride or be a good rider because you're a woman. Like, that's not, I don't believe that that's good. So if we're talking about like it's gender neutral as far as like, hey, you want to check out mountain biking? Cool. Come on, let's check it out. Yeah, we should be neutral. We shouldn't, you know, say, you know, boys can do it and girls can't. Like, that's ridiculous. That's not what you know, I would say. But the problem is that what is usually meant when people talk about gender neutral and stuff like that is that it's because there's a disparity between men and women, that there's more men that ride than women, that's a sign of, you know, underlying systemic sexism. I mean, let's just call it what it is, right? Like, that's the implication. Like, the boys are being sexist, the boys are being boys, you know, and the stinky boys are discouraging the girls from riding. And that if the stinky boys would just get out of the way, that women would just flock to mountain biking. And so this has been kind of the underlying message. It's one of the reasons you see like women's only camps and activities going on, which again, I'm not necessarily against, but this is the mindset that, like, you know, boys have created an environment that discourages women from riding, and that if the boys would just change that environment, or we created a safe space for women within mountain biking or whatever that is, that women would just flock to riding and everything would be great. And that's what, you know, because there shouldn't be any differences between men and women. And this is what gender neutral is, usually the implication when people say this is that there are no differences between men and women. So therefore, the only reason that there is a difference in participation in this activity is because the boys have been keeping the women out. And again, like, I'm not going to say that there's not something to that, right? Like, there's definitely a male, you know, sometimes locker room style attitude with mountain biking. And I don't necessarily think that's all bad, right? Like, boys need the ability to be boys. Like, that's not bad. But I definitely agree that when it gets to be a little too toxic and starts to discourage people in a way from trying the sport, like, okay, maybe we should discuss that. So I'm not saying that there's nothing at all to that, right? That we shouldn't examine some of the things that we're doing in the sport and some of the ways that we go about the sport and talk about it and say, and I, you know, maybe there's something there. But the problem is that's not really what's happening. And by delivering that message, again, like, it's a well-intentioned message, but it's hurting the people that it's meant to help, which are the female riders. And the reason for this is because, again, like I mentioned earlier, mountain biking, like any activity, is not gender neutral. There's nothing that's not gender neutral. Like, if you just break it down to its most basic level, like, nature isn't gender neutral. I mean, there are just basic things in nature. Like, if you want to have a child, like, nature is not neutral about that. Like, if you don't have the correct equipment, you're not going to be able to have a child. And so, you know, like, again, that's a really extreme example. But like, even nature, when you look at it, is not gender neutral. There's nothing that's gender neutral. And the reason that things are not gender neutral is because everything has a set of physical and oftentimes mental characteristics that lead to success in that activity. And that's just inherent in any activity. Like, there's activities aren't the same, right? Like, running 100 meters is not the same thing as running a marathon, is not the same thing as riding a mountain bike. Like, there's going to be different physical and mental characteristics that go into a successful athlete in these different sports and activities. And the reality is that nature is not neutral as far as how it, as far as the physical and mental characteristics between the sexes. And again, like, you know, there's science, there's all sorts of stuff that backs this up. Even just common sense says, yeah, there are some differences between the sexes. And so if there are differences on average between men and women, and then different activities have different physical and mental characteristics that go into making, you know, being successful in that activity, then you can't say that a sport is gender neutral. It is going to prefer the physical characteristics that on average, you know, are exhibited by one sex as opposed to the other. And so, again, like, this is, you see this across the board. Like, as an example of the way that it goes, in the favor of women is gymnastics. I mean, if you look at female gymnastics and men's gymnastics, they're two completely different sports, because to do the things that women are doing, you need the physical characteristics that they have. And men just don't have those physical characteristics. And so, you know, you see this in different sports and activities, and even like spread it out into life. And, you know, just not to like get, you know, too far off subject, but this is kind of, you know, people may remember there was the infamous Google memo where there was a guy who was trying to point out, like, hey, there are some differences between the sexes. And so what does this mean for women? How can we actually use this information to help women, as opposed to pretending that there are no differences between the sexes, and that, you know, not actually taking these things into account? And of course, that got turned around and blown into this, you know, misogynist, anti-woman attitude, simply because he had the audacity to point to science and say, look, you know, there are on average differences between men and women. Obviously, we have outliers that don't fall within those norms, but on average, most people kind of fall within these parameters. And so what does this really mean? And what kind of discussion can we have to actually help the situation, rather than just putting out this fairy tale idea that there is no difference, and that, you know, that doesn't lead to solutions, right? And so, you know, this is kind of a similar idea that, you know, what can we do to actually help the people that we're looking to help and have better discussions by acknowledging these things? And so that is really kind of the point of the podcast, is one, like, we need to acknowledge that there are differences between men and women, and that that is going to have an impact on women and how they experience riding, and what is going to help them, like the things that they need to do to improve at riding. And so when you look at mountain biking, you're going to find a couple things. Again, we just talked about these physical characteristics. So what are these physical characteristics that go into being a successful mountain biker? And again, like, I will just, you know, give you guys a peek at the end before I start, just so you know where I'm going with this, is that you can change these things through training. So just because you're born a certain way does not mean that you have to stay that way. And so you can change through training. And so it's really a matter of identifying your weaknesses so that you can better target what you need to improve through training to make the biggest impact on your goal. So like I said, as I go into these physical characteristics, and again, I point out that men tend to come into mountain bikers with higher levels of these things than women do, you know, the underlying message is not that women shouldn't ride, right? The end is going to be, what can we do from a training standpoint to help women have a better experience riding and make better use of their training? Because there are some things that they should focus on a little bit differently than men, perhaps. And so that's really at the heart of what this is about. So, but again, like, what are these physical characteristics? And so one of the things that you're going to find is that strength to weight ratio plays a big role in mountain biking, and that that, you know, strength to weight ratio plays into your power to weight ratio, which everybody, most cyclists understand as being really important. But just your overall strength to weight ratio is going to play a role in your success as a rider. And again, this is why, you know, when riders start strength training and getting stronger and improving their strength to weight ratio, they see improvements on the bike. Like, that is one of the main factors that determine your success as a rider. And so, again, when you look at, on average, what, you know, men tend to be stronger than women. And so someone coming into mountain biking, if you're a man, you're going to come in stronger and have a better strength to weight ratio than your average woman will. And again, this is going to impact your experience and how you experience riding. And so, but again, like, that's the, you know, one of the main things. Another thing that goes into it is your upper body strength, especially like your grip strength. And there was actually a study that looked at, it was specifically looking at downhill racing, but looking at what were the predicting factors in your performance. And they looked at, you know, like VO2 max and your cardio and some other things. And those things actually had like no correlation at all. And the thing that had the strongest correlation was, I forget, it was technical skills and then grip strength endurance. And I forget which one was one and which one was two, but that grip strength endurance was highly predictive of your performance in a downhill race. And so that grip strength is, again, that is something that men tend to have higher levels of than women. You know, they have higher upper body strength levels, and that leads to higher grip strength levels. And so you have these two physical factors that go into making a successful rider: your strength to weight ratio and your grip strength endurance. And both of these things, on average, men are going to have higher levels of than women. So again, this is why mountain biking is not a gender neutral sport. It prefers a specific set of characteristics. And so again, if you have a woman who falls out of that norm and you have a man that falls out of that norm, so you have an exceptionally strong, you know, or not necessarily exceptional, but you have a stronger than average woman and you have a weaker than average man, then you're going to see, you know, a difference there. So again, like, you can point to outliers and see like, oh, well, look at, you know, this example here and this example here. And it's like, yes, yes, you're right in that specific scenario, but that just reinforces my point. Like, usually the women who tend to do better than the men have higher than normal strength to weight ratios, and they have these higher than normal grip strength endurance levels, and so they go towards the higher end of the spectrum. And so that's why you see that with them. But that reinforces what I'm saying, is that if you want to ride at a higher level, then you need to improve these things. And so this starts to get into my top three pieces of advice, like how this impacts female riders. And the number one thing is that you need to work on improving that strength to weight ratio. And so this means a couple of things. It means, one, you need to do strength training. Like, a man can possibly get away without strength training, and especially some dude in his 20s, you know, maybe even early 30s. Like, he can probably get away and ride at a pretty decent level without strength training or doing much of it. In my opinion, I don't think that strength training is optional for a woman. Like, if she wants to ride at a high level and have a better experience on the trail, then that strength to weight ratio is something that you have to improve. And so that makes strength training a higher priority for women than it does necessarily for men. Again, I think it should be a priority for everyone. But again, like, you're going to see people who can get away with it, and those are going to tend to be men. So if you're looking at saying, well, you know, training programs that are predominantly used by men, or looking at, you know, guys in your area and, you know, how they train compared to how good of a riders they are. And you're like, well, you know, he focuses on cardio and he doesn't do a lot of strength training. You know, if you're a female rider, that is not necessarily the pathway that's going to lead you to the same success because of these physical differences. So you getting stronger and it is a priority for you. So you have to be focused on strength training and doing strength training. It can't be an option if you are a female mountain bike rider. The other side of this is optimizing the strength to weight ratio, right? So you need to get strong, but there's a strength to weight ratio. And so like this does mean that if you are overweight, you need to lose weight. Like there, you're going to always struggle to, you know, if you're overweight, to optimize your strength to weight ratio in a way that lets you experience riding in probably the funnest, safest way possible, in my opinion, right? I'm not saying you can't have fun on the trail. Anybody can get out and have fun. But if you're trying to improve and you're trying to improve your experience and your performance, then that strength to weight ratio, you have to address it. And so you have to lose weight. You cannot be heavy. And again, it's going to impact women differently. A man can get away with being a little bit heavier because of those natural strength to weight ratios that he has versus a woman. And so you need to address that. But the opposite end of that is don't be afraid of putting on a little weight, because I see this too, where women come in and they're almost too skinny. Like you need some muscle. You need some armor for when you hit the ground, because as a mountain biker, you will crash. And two, there's just a certain amount of muscle that you need to produce a certain amount of strength. And so if you put on a little bit of muscle, but you greatly increase your strength, then you have increased your strength to weight ratio. And so, you know, you got to look at your weight in comparison to your strength levels as well. And there's going to be a sweet spot that you want to try to aim for that's going to optimize your strength to weight ratio. So getting stronger in the gym and then understanding how your weight, whether you are actually too light and you could stand to put on a few pounds of muscle, or whether you need to lose a few pounds of fat to help optimize that strength to weight ratio. You just have to be honest with yourself, because that is, like I said, one of those top determining factors. And this is also going to go into your grip strength endurance, which will help with that, because again, you know, focusing on getting the upper body stronger is one of those things that will really help female riders as well. Because when you look at it on average, men tend to be stronger than women, but those differences tend to be less when you look at upper body versus, you know, at lower body, right? So a woman's lower body strength is going to be closer to a man's lower body strength, whereas a woman's upper body strength is going to be usually significantly less than a man's upper body strength. And so, again, that leads to this overall lower strength level on average, but it's even more pronounced with the upper body. And so making sure that you are focusing on that upper body strength. And, you know, again, this is where that grip strength endurance comes in. And you know, the grip strength is, I think it was Gray Cook from the Functional Movement Screen, who originally said, or at least the first time I saw it, was, you know, the grip is a window to the core, right? Like your core strength is directly tied to your grip strength. Like you can't have a strong grip if you've got a weak core. And so, you know, these things are all intimately tied together. And so focusing on that upper body strength, the core strength, like these things are going to have a much bigger impact for women than they necessarily will men, because of these lower strength levels on average coming in. So it just means that they have more to gain from improving their strength levels, specifically in the upper body, and addressing that strength to weight ratio and that grip strength endurance, you know, the physical characteristics there. So that's really like my number one piece of advice is that you have to look at those things, the strength weight ratio and just getting stronger, and, you know, especially with the upper body if you're mountain biking. And so the other two pieces of advice, one, it's funny, I was like, okay, what are some other things I can advise female riders based on this? And there's all sorts of little things, and a lot of these things, really what it is like a lot of the advice is advice that I would give to almost any rider. But the thing is that it is more pronounced. Like the penalties for not doing these things tend to be more pronounced for female riders because of these lower strength levels and lower grip strength endurance levels that they tend to come into riding with. And so, for example, my next piece of advice was to stand up more, which is something that really I advise everybody do. But again, for female riders, standing pedaling is your strongest, most powerful position, when you're sitting down, you don't have the same leverage and strength, and especially with your legs. You're actually like making it less, when you're sitting down, you can use less of your leg strength than you can when you're standing up. And so if one of your strengths coming into riding is the fact that you tend to have, you know, pretty good lower body strength levels, then you would want to use those things. And again, you're penalized when you're sitting down. You cannot get the same leverage, and you can't get your hips behind it. You can't get the full knee extension. So again, everybody knows, like, instinctively, if you got to lay down as much power as possible, you're going to stand up. And so that is, widely recognized as your most powerful pedaling position. And so if you're not using it, again, you're penalizing yourself, and you're actually taking one of your strengths that you have off the table by focusing way too much on sitting down. And again, a man can get away with this, right? He's got better strength weight ratios and so that it's not going to penalize him as much. Like, it's still going to penalize him, but not as much. And so, female riders need to stand up more. And the other thing that comes along with this is that you're going to need to use technique and efficient movement, again, much more than a man will, because you're not going to be able to just like out-strength and out-fitness your way through things like a man can. And so that efficient movement and efficient technique becomes super important as well. And you can't execute any techniques sitting down. If your butt's on the seat, the only technique you can execute is seated pedaling or sitting there, right? And so if you want to do anything else, cornering, unweighting your front end, any sort of technical skill, you have to stand up and get your butt off of the seat. And so when you're standing up, you're in your most strongest, most powerful pedaling position, taking advantage of one of the strengths that you're coming to the table with, your good lower body strength. And you're putting yourself in a position where you can make better use of your technique and skill and the efficient movement that you need to, make sure you're just, riding at a high level and having a good experience out there, which is really the most important thing. So, standing up more, you're going to get stronger doing it. That's one of the things, like my daughter, she's starting riding, and I'm telling her, it's not like seated pedaling is perfect, right? Like one, you do slide out, seated pedaling. The idea that you need to sit down to keep weight on your rear end is a myth, right? It's a misunderstanding. It's not weight. Because if it was weight, then the heaviest people would have the best traction. They'd never spin out. And we know that's not it, right? You can have too much weight and you start spinning out. And so it's pressure that you need. You need pressure through your rear tire into the ground to create friction and traction. And pressure is weight used actively. And so you don't need your butt on the seat. What you need is your butt sitting back so you can use your weight actively. And so getting your butt off the seat actually makes it easier for you to stand up and pedal. But again, people got to get past this myth of, I have to keep weight on my rear tire by sitting on my seat or I'm going to spin out, because it's a myth, right? It's not true. We've all seen, and you yourself have probably experienced climbing something while standing up. And so if that was true, then you shouldn't be able to climb stuff standing up. And so anyways, like I said, it's a misunderstanding, like the difference between weight and pressure. They're related, but they're not the same thing. And so anyone who says you need weight doesn't really understand what they're talking about. It's about pressure that you need. And so you're standing up more is going to help you with all sorts of stuff. But like I said, you just got to get past that myth of needing to keep your butt on the seat. Cause you're going to get stronger at something, right? So like I said, I was explaining to my daughter, you're going to have to pick one, right? Like you're going to get stronger at something. Like right now, seated pedaling isn't easy. And it has its problems. Your front end wanders around, so you're having to hunch over and lock the front end down and keep it from wandering around. And like it's not like it's the perfect pedaling position. And when you're standing up, like, yeah, you got to be a little more sensitive to your weight shifts and making sure you keep enough weight and pressure on the rear end and not slide out. But, again, like each one has its pluses and minuses. I mean, so the thing is you have to pick one and get stronger at it. And the problem is that people pick seated pedaling right off the bat. And again, it's well-intentioned, right? They have their friends telling them, oh, you need to sit down and keep weight on your seat and all this other stuff. And then you end up just sitting down all the time and barely ever standing up. And so you get strong with seated pedaling and you never get strong with standing pedaling. They're two completely different postures and movements on the bike. And so you have to train them both and work them both in order to improve them. And so just being strong with seated pedaling doesn't mean that you should be strong with standing pedaling. And so when you stand up to pedal and it feels weak, that means that you suck and you shouldn't do it. It just means that you should do it more and get strong with it. And so, it will help you take advantage of your natural strengths better as a female rider if you can unshackle your butt from the seat and learn how to make use of standing pedaling. It's going to help you even more. So that is my second piece of advice. And then my third piece of advice actually comes from my wife. So I was asking her this morning, I was like, what do you think, you know, would be like a good other piece of advice for female riders based on this? And her suggestion was make sure that your handlebars aren't too wide. And this has been a thing I've been on recently, and you can actually go to my website at bikejames.com and do a search for your handlebars are too wide, a case study. That was the title of the video and a blog post I did on it. And I have my wife in it. What happened is we went and we bought her a new bike, and the handlebars were like, you know, 750 or 720 or something, like, you know, really, really wide bars. They weren't 800 or whatever, which are, you know, ridiculous unless you're 6'5 or something like that. But they were, really wide for her. And so what I did is on the video, I showed using her and her bike, one, how the wide handlebars affected her movement and mobility on the bike when her hands were too wide. And then I showed how I determine what a good hand width should be. And then we cut our handlebars down and then showed again, now look at the range of motion and how she's able to move on the bike. And there's a marked difference between the two. And I think we ended up cutting her bars down to like 670 millimeters or something like that. But again, if you've seen any of these, like what I advise people to do is find the widest hand width that you can do a good push-up with. And by good push-up, I mean you're keeping your shoulder blades tucked, you're keeping your core engaged, all those basics for push-up, something that a good trainer or coach would look at and say, yeah, that's a good push-up. Like, how wide can your hands go before you start to lose that? And you can do that, right? Like you see again, especially with females who lack the core strength and the upper back strength, they'll tend to put their hands really wide and then their elbows will flare out to the side. But you watch as they go to do a push-up with their hands really wide, they'll collapse. Like, they can't come all the way down. Their core starts to collapse. Like, things fall apart quickly, especially the closer to the bottom that you get. And so at the top, they may feel strong and stable with their hands wide, but as soon as they start moving down into their range of motion, it quickly shows that the wide hands don't allow the body to maintain an optimal alignment, and they simply can't move the way that they need to maintain good form and efficient movement, and you know, it's not good. Like, right, again, that particular posture puts a lot of stress on your AC joint and shoulders. So again, like, this is why any good coach or trainer wouldn't let you go into the gym and just start banging out push-ups with your hands really wide like that. They would make sure that you got your hands in a good position where you can do a good full range of motion movement while keeping your shoulders in a good position. And so most people are going to find that this is significantly narrower than what you have. And especially females, because unfortunately this idea that wider handlebars equals more leverage, it's not true, right? It's not accurate. Like, it's the leverage that they're talking about is not, I guess there's extra leverage there, but the idea that this extra, it's not, Wider handlebars equal more leverage, and more leverage equals more stability. That is the simplistic equation that has led to this rash of super wide handlebars that we see. And by wide handlebars, I mean, honestly, I'd say anything that is in the 720 to 750 plus range is probably too wide for most people, especially female riders. Like, I would challenge that most female riders would do better in the 700 millimeter range, give or take, than in the 750, give or take. But this idea that wider handlebars equals more leverage, more leverage equals more stability, and so therefore, if you get wider handlebars, you're going to have more stability on the trail. You know, they'll tie it into like, oh, you got wider tires, so you need wider handlebars because of the extra leverage. I mean, I've heard all sorts of weird bike shop pseudoscience coming from people as far as, you know, why they need to have wide handlebars. But again, you can tell none of these people actually understand math and geometry and movement principles and how these things actually work in the real world, as opposed to, you know, this simplistic fantasy world of wider handlebars equals more leverage equals more stability. Because again, there's a difference between stability and stiffness, right? Like, stiffness in the system is false stability. Stability is something that you can turn on and off, and stiffness is something that you can't. And so if you take someone who doesn't have stability, they lack the strength and stability for a position, and you put them in a position that makes them stiff, they're going to feel more stable. It's going to feel more stable in that position because you've created stiffness in the system. But that stiffness is not authentic. They can't turn it on and off. And again, this is what you see with the wide-handed push-ups, is that you create stiffness in the system by widening the hand. You create this suspension effect between the hands where you're kind of suspending yourself between your hands instead of stabilizing yourself between your hands. And so this suspension effect creates this stiffness in the system that feels more stable at the top. That's why they do it. That's why people who don't have the stability naturally will go to this wide-handed position, because it gives the false sense of stability through this stiffness. But then when they try to move, you see the stiffness manifest itself in the fact that they can't turn it off, that they're kind of stuck in where they're at. And especially as they come deeper into their range of motion, just the more they have to compensate for the stiffness that they've created with their wide hand position. And so, you know, that is what you're seeing as well with people with the wide handlebars. And like I said, it's more pronounced for female riders because, just going back, like, they tend to have lower upper body strength levels than men do. This is one of the reasons you tend to see this wide hand compensation among females much more often than you do among men, is to make up for this lack of upper body strength that they tend to have. And so you get them on these wide handlebars that's playing into this, and it feels more stable in this position, but it actually takes away from your ability to move properly on the bike. And more importantly, it takes away from your ability to apply force and pressure into your handlebars. And this was kind of my wife's point, because we're trying to optimize what you have. So you have lower body or upper body strength levels than men do. And so, one, you need to make sure that you're doing strength training to improve that. And two, you want to make sure that you have yourself in a position where you can most optimally apply that strength into the handlebars to maneuver and apply technique to your bike. And so having your hands too wide makes this hard to do. And so, you know, you see this one with like a snatch versus a power clean, right? Like, you know, one, a snatch is going over your head, but they use significantly less weight with a snatch, which is the Olympic lift where their hands are super wide. And one of the main reasons is because they're wide hands. You see this in a deadlift, right? Like, if you were to do a deadlift with your hands right outside your legs where they're narrower, you're going to be able to lift way more weight than you are if you widen your hands out wide. Like, that wide grip actually takes away from your grip strength and your ability to hold on to that the bar and stabilize the bar. So it affects your overall strength levels by having your hands too wide. Same thing with the bench press. You know, if you have a wide grip bench press, you're not going to be able to press as much weight. So, you know, a deadlift, you're not going to be able to pull as much weight if your hands are too wide. A bench press, you're not going to be able to push as much weight if your hands are too wide. And just a quick thing, like I've heard again, man, this is the bike shop science, and it just cracks me up sometimes. But I've heard some people throw out there, we'll look at professional power lifters, and you'll see how they have their hands really wide when they're doing their big bench press. You watch some guy try to bench press like 800-900 pounds or whatever, and his hands are going to be really wide. The thing is what people don't realize is they have these lifting suits on that are so tight that they can't bring their arms in any closer than that. Like literally, like if it is like wearing a bunch of t-shirts that are five sizes too small. I mean, you're so stiff, and that stiffness is what they're using to help them lift that weight. Okay, so they're lifting in this is gear. They call it gear, and it actually changes how you lift. And they will acknowledge this. Again, if you talk to power lifters, like you have to lift differently naturally than you do with gear. And if you watch a power lifter lift naturally, or a natural powerlifting meet where they don't allow this gear, you will see the hands much narrower than you do in the geared meets where they have these lifting suits on where their arms are out to their side and they literally couldn't bring them in to that position if they tried. But again, the stiffness from the suit is making up for that. They're still able to lift all this weight because the stiffness of the suit is helping them lift that weight. And so again, that's why you see people lift way more weight with gear than they do naturally. But again, if you've just heard someone say something about like powerlifters using a wide grip for their max bench presses, like this is what they're talking about and that's what they're missing. Like you will not find any examples where having your hands too wide or out wide like that will allow you to press more weight. Okay, there's no examples of it. There's no examples where having your hands out wide like that will allow you to pull or row more weight. And so these two basic movements that you're doing on the bike, pushing and pulling, you can see the movement principles behind them say that if your hands get too wide, they're going to start losing power and losing strength. And so the hand width is usually right around what you do a good push-up width. And like I said, for most people, that is going to be significantly narrower than what they have now, especially female riders who tend to fall victim to this wider handlebar equals more leverage and more stability thing more than men do. Because again, having those lower core strength levels, having those lower upper body strength levels, having your hands wide is going to feel more stable than necessarily a man who's coming in with those higher levels. Like he's going to be able to have his hands narrower and it feel more stable. And so if you're just going on how you feel on the bike and you know, just on the parking lot or rolling around, just whatever, if you're just going on how you feel on the bike without looking at how does the human body optimally move and then how do we apply that to the bike and at least trying to reconcile these things, then you're missing something. And so again, it's not a mystery how the body moves. We know these things. You know, these things get lost when we start looking at how to apply movement to the bike, because most of the people in the industry don't understand these movement principles, especially when you're talking about the skills coaching industry. These, you know, most of them don't understand these movement principles. You know, if you were to try to talk to them about them, they would not really have good answers for these points. And so it's well-intentioned, but not understanding these movement principles and how they apply on and off of the bike can lead to some bad advice, especially because if you have someone come to you, right, and you don't understand this and they're like, man, when my hands are out wider, I feel better. Okay, great. That's great. Go for that. But if you don't understand that there's actually like, well, wait a minute, is this too wide? And do we really just need to work on getting stronger and getting more stable in this position? Because this is actually the optimal position for you. And again, an example of this, that, you know, my wife was there for And man, I wish I had a video of this. This is one of those times I kicked myself for not getting a video, but I had done a free clinic on how to do a front wheel lift and, you know, manual, whatever you want to call it, front wheel, rear wheel lifts. And so there was a lady in the clinic, older lady, and, you know, she had a bike and she had, the bars were just really, really wide. And again, you know, guy at the bike shop told me I needed wide handlebars because, you know, I needed the stability and, you know, that, you know, they feel pretty good. And I'm like, okay, cool. And, you know, I don't argue with people when they come to my workshops. It's not what I'm there to do. If they want some advice, I'll give it to them. But, you know, I'm going to share my knowledge and let them apply it and go from there, answer any questions they have. That's kind of how I go about those things. But as she was trying to do it, she could not get the front wheel to lift. Like, she's, everybody else was following the technique that I was giving them, and you know, getting the front wheel up, you know, no problem after a few minutes of practicing it. And she, for the life of her, could not get the front wheel up. And, you know, we just kind of chalked it up to like, oh, well, you know, just need more practice. And that's fine. I tell people all the time, like, hey, you may not figure this out right now. And that's fine. Like, you may need to go home and practice this. And so, but before she left, I forget why, but she jumped on my wife's bike just to check it out, which was, they were similar size, and she was just wanting to check out her bike. And of course, my wife had the much narrower handlebars, and she decided to try the front wheel lift with that. And man, she popped that front wheel right up, like no problem. And she could do it repeatedly. And then she went back to her old bike and she could not get that wheel up. And the main difference was the handlebar width. And again, if going back to like that example, the deadlift, or anytime you're trying to pull, right? Like, you know, I'm not trying to do like a row, but it is a pull. Like, I'm doing an explosive body movement that creates a pulling action at the hands, along with a pushing action of the feet that helps to get that front wheel to lift. And so, but she could not apply the force properly, couldn't get it to work with her hands that wide. It was like her trying to do a wide grip deadlift, and she just could not get enough force into the bars to get the front wheel to lift, where as soon as she narrowed her hands, she could get that force that she needed to lift the front end. And so, you know, it was a stark example of how having your hands too wide will directly affect your technical skills on the bike as well. And so, you know, wide handlebars make it harder to lean the bike. This is basic geometry, all right? Like, the longer the handlebars are, the steeper you're going to have to, the more you're going to have to lean those bars to create the same angle with the bike in the ground. And again, like I said, if you don't believe me, just it's geometry. Just do a few little sketch drawings and you'll see for yourself. And again, geometry is great because it doesn't care about your feelings, right? This isn't one of these like, oh, well, you know, I feel this. Like, hey, man, look, that's fine. But geometry doesn't care about your feelings. This is just, you know, if you've got 750 millimeter wide handlebars versus 700 meter wide handlebars, you're going to have to lean the bar significantly more to create the same angle of lean with the bike in the ground. Okay, so it's harder to, again, you can have your handlebars get too narrow, right? We don't want them super twitchy because they can get too twitchy by having them too narrow. So again, there's a sweet spot, but you know, you're at your, it makes it harder to lean the bike for corners. Like I said, it makes it harder to lift the front end. As you can see from the video that I shot for the handlebars are too wide, a case example from my wife, how it affects her range of motion going up and down, her full range of motion throughout the cockpit on her bike. Having her hands too wide locked her a couple inches away from her stem, whereas like when she was able to get her hands in where we found was the optimal position, she was able to come down a few inches lower. So it greatly increased her range of motion in the cockpit. And man, the more you can move around in the cockpit, the more, especially as you get to those extreme ranges of motion, the better. You know, if you can drop down lower while staying in a strong, stable position, that's going to mean that you're not going to get bucked out of position if you get, you know, you can't get down to that position. So anyways, like I said, there are multiple examples of how having your handlebars too wide are going to affect your ability to maneuver your bike and your ability to apply force and pressure into the handlebars, which is a vital component of technical skills and riding your bike. And so again, as a female, if you are it's going to affect you even more. You're going to have, it's going to be even more dramatic for you because of the lower upper body strength levels on average and stuff like that. So, you know, then that was my, I thought it was a good thought. My wife brought that one up and I said, you know, that's a good one. So that'll be, that was our third one. So those are my three pieces of advice for female riders. And again, they're pretty, you know, like I said, really they're pieces of advice that I would have for anyone, but they're going to make a bigger impact because of these physical characteristic differences on average that you're going to find for between men and women, you know, for the female riders. And again, just kind of going back to the beginning, like I actually believe that acknowledging these things, right, and telling female riders like, hey, you're going to come in and on, you know, you're going to need to be doing strength training. You're going to need to be focusing on standing, pedaling. Like, don't worry what the men are doing. Because, hey, guess what? They're different. There are some differences between men and women. And as we do these things to close these gaps, you know, we're going to see less of that difference, you know, through training and stuff, but they're there. And so our strategies need to be different. And I think that if we were honest about that, that we would help more females have a better experience coming in, you know, maintain having a good positive experience and just be able to progress. Like, really, because one of the things is again, everyone's like, you know, I'm having fun, blah, blah, blah. And that's fine, right? Like, one of my kind of big themes lately has been riding for a lifetime. And that it's really kind of, those are the riders that I'm talking to. Okay, like, I don't care if this is just something you do and whatever, you may not be doing this next year. Okay, that's fine. I'm not talking to you. What I'm talking to really are like the people who, like, they love mountain biking and they see themselves doing this for a long time and they want to know, how do I do this for a long time? And so one of the things that really helps people stick with something is developing a sense of mastery and feeling that they understand how to improve and get better at what they're doing. And if they feel like they understand and they're moving in a positive direction and they're improving, then that feedback loop helps them stick with it. And so, you know, that is one of those components to riding for a lifetime, is understanding, what do I need to do to get better so that I know what path to walk so that I can continue to develop mastery and competence and all these things in these areas. And again, there's all sorts of carryover from doing that with riding that is going to impact other areas of your life. And so, you know, that's really who I'm talking to with this as well. And again, some of the motivation that I have behind it is because I understand how that it's hard to stay motivated to do something if you're getting frustrated with it. If you feel like you're not able to improve, if you feel like you're not you know, getting better and you don't really understand what you need to do to get better and you're trying things but they're not working, it's frustrating and it's very hard to stay motivated to do that. And it, you know, not to blame you, like, that's human nature. Like, why would you keep doing something that's not working and is frustrating you? And so the cure for that is either to quit, right? Hopefully that's not what we're going to do, or we're going to find a better way to help us improve and get past the frustration of not seeing improvement and not understanding what we need to do to improve. And so that's, it's really like at the heart of this is trying to help female riders understand that your path may be a little bit different than a guy's path is. And that's totally fine. And that this idea that, you know, gender neutral sport means that there's no differences between the sexes is simply not true. It's a fantasy that is well-intentioned on some level, but is going to end up hurting the people that it's intended to help. Because if we really want to get more women into riding, then we need to make sure that we give them the best path forward when they, you know, decide to start, to help them have a good experience and understand the path to walk, to continue to have a good experience. And that's how we're going to get new people into the sport, not just now, but keep them in the sport for years and years to come by developing this, you know, riding for a lifetime mentality and attitude, instead of just focusing on, you know, just I'm trying to get ready for this race series here, or you know, whatever, you know, like these short-term goals that can sometimes lead to long-term problems. And so if you're interested in learning more about, I did a podcast on the riding for a lifetime concept not too long ago that you can find at bikejames.com, but to kind of learn about more about that. But I just kind of wanted to wrap up with that, because it's, hey man, I understand if you're going out there and you're riding and you're having fun, great. Like I'm not going to argue with you about that. But if you're like, man, I want to get better at this, how do I get better at this? And I want to get better as quickly as I can, or, you know, how do I continue to get better at this? Or maybe I've hit a little bit of a plateau. What are some things I can do to continue to progress? Like, that's really who I'm talking to, because a lot of times those things arrive, we arrive at the answer to those questions through, you know, some uncomfortable conversations with ourselves. Like, hey man, this is what I am. This is my problem. Maybe I got to lose a few pounds. Maybe I got to, you know, gain some strength. Maybe I need to stand up more and just understand that it's going to take time to get better at doing it. But once I get better at it, you know, hey, it's going to really improve a bunch of stuff for me on the trail. Like, you know, so it's you know, just looking at things from that perspective, that I think is really just kind of the take home message there. So anyways, I'm starting to ramble there a little bit. I'm just going to go ahead and bring it on home. So again, just I hope you guys understand that the message here is really to try to empower women and help them understand what they can do to make the biggest impact on their riding, not only now, but for years to come. And that, yeah, you know, really to encourage them to take control of that. Like, you know, we all get dealt a hand of cards. And one of the things that I love about training is that you can change that, right? There's certain things you can't, right? Like if you're 5'3", you're going to be 5'3". But like, it doesn't matter, right? Or some things you can change. You can change your mindset. You can change your strength levels. You can change your cardio. You can change your mobility. Like, these things you can change. You can enhance them, right? So it's almost more like a video game rather than like a card game. It's not like you got dealt a hand of cards and you just got to play them. It's like, no, man, you got a character at the beginning of a video game, and this is just the physical characteristics it has, and you can level them up. Like, through training, there's certain things that you can level up, and by doing that, improve your experience and your performance in mountain biking, like I said, just in life in general. So how do you level up most efficiently? Well, for female riders, getting stronger, standing up more, getting narrow handlebars. I think those are really good places to start to kind of help them, you know, tap into their natural strengths and help bridge some of those gaps that they may have between where they're at now and where they need to be in order to, you know, kind of optimize some of the things that's going to, you know, optimize their performance and experience on the trail. So, yeah, if you have any questions about this, please let me know, james@bikejames.com, or you can post a comment or whatever on this podcast post. You can also check me out at bikejames.com. Got lots of free content there, free workouts and stuff you can sign up for. You can check out the other workouts that I have, including my Ultimate MTB Workout Program and my Kettlebell Program and Bodyweight Program. And, you know, if you need a workout program, I got you covered. But, yeah, go there and check it out. Lots of free stuff, too. So, yeah, that's it. It's going to do it for this podcast. Appreciate you guys checking it out, and I will talk to everybody next time.